200 grand a year from a local email newsletter. What's up? What's up? Nick Loper here. Welcome to the Side Hustle Show, part of the Entrepreneur Podcast Network. It's a business podcast you can actually apply. Lots to love about starting a newsletter business. Low overhead, scalable, sellable, like the Hustle Morning Brew, wholesaling for eight-figure exits. Now, today's guest has a unique take on the newsletter business, focusing on his hometown, Annapolis, Maryland, becoming a pillar of the community along the way and making great money at the same time. From NaptownScoop.com, Ryan Snedden. Welcome to the Side Hustle Show.
Thanks, Nick. That was a fantastic intro. Definitely make me sound more impressive than I am.
Get people pumped up because stick around. You're going to learn how Ryan grew his subscriber base to roughly half the town's population. Huge. How he monetizes the business and the logistics of putting out a high quality newsletter 5 days a week. Now, your listener only bonus for this week is my big list of 75 newsletter niches, thinking beyond just local newsletter strategy, but how you can apply some of Ryan's strategies to a newsletter side hustle of your own. You can download that for free at the show notes for this episode. The easiest way to get there is just follow the link in the episode description. It'll get you right over there. Now, Ryan, you had this kind of fun celebrity moment showing up to a local charity event, and it starts to hit you because people keep asking for selfies. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah. So it was June 2021. I went to a local event run by our Rotaract Club, which is like the Rotary, but for younger people. We probably had 6,000 or 7,000 Instagram followers at this point, probably a similar number of newsletter subscribers. But for some reason, or somehow I got invited to this thing. I got there right on time, which I never do. I'm always late, but I walk in right on time and there's not that many people there. I don't recognize anybody except the organizers of the event, but they're busy. And so I walk out into the back deck of this venue that they have. As soon as I exit the door, I heard my name and I look to see if I know anybody, and I don't recognize anybody on the porch. There's only like three people on the porch.
But that's always a great moment when you're like, oh shoot, you know, scanning through the mental Rolodex. Like, how does this person know me?
Oh no, there wasn't even any recognition at all. I looked at him and I was like, it wasn't, oh shoot, I can't remember their name. It was, how on earth does this person know who I am? And so then I walk over because I'm curious and they're like, you're the Naptown Scoop guy. Can we take a picture with you? And I was like, what? This has never happened before. We're about a year in at this point. Started August 2020. This is now June 2021. So that was as soon as I walked in. And then that happened like a dozen more times at that one event over the next 2 or 3 hours. I've become friends with actually a lot of the people who did ask because they really were the big fans of the thing, of the newsletter. But that was an aha moment where I was like, wow, people know this. They want to know me. And I also need to go to every single thing like this that I ever can find because this is great marketing. You know, not only do the people that are there know me, but more people are learning about it, especially because there's like the snowball effect where if somebody walks out and somebody asks that person for a picture, everybody's looking around and like, wait, who is that person? Should I?
Yeah, totally.
Them? And so I would notice after going to these events that our subscriber count would jump a little bit, but it was pretty funny to see that in the beginning.
You get recognized out in the wild. It's almost like the TV news anchor for a younger generation, perhaps, where you start to get some positive notoriety in the community, like you become a well-known person. I think that's kind of a cool. And maybe if that appeals to you as a listener, that's a side benefit of starting this thing, to really have a pulse, to really have, you know, become a voice in the community. So nobody else was doing this. So summer 2020 is when you get the inspiration to start this. Nobody else was doing it or they weren't doing it well. And so you come in, talk to me about the early days. Like, how do you get these initial 100,000 subscribers, 100 to 1,000, not 100,000 subscribers, but like the first people to send this to?
Yeah, not very complicated. A lot of people for their first newsletter, they'll just send it to their family and friends. I did not have any family and friends that lived in Annapolis. I grew up about 45 minutes away from Annapolis. My uncle had lived there, and that's why I knew it and loved it. But he has since moved away and only spends a couple months a year here now. So I don't really have any friends or family to send this to. I just was like, I'm going to try this. I think it's a good idea. So I just started running Facebook ads, and that's how I got all the subscribers. I got 70 subscribers for the first one. I think we had 150 for the second one. And then I can't remember how many we had after that for each individual newsletter. But I do remember those first two. And that was really encouraging because when you first set the first one, it was like 80% open rate, super high. Then second one was a little bit less, but doubled in subscriber count. And so that was just really good early traction. And that was only once a week that I was sending them. I think it was every Wednesday, but I only did that for 2 weeks on Wednesdays. And then I realized that if I was ever going to make any money on this, then I would need more advertising than just one day a week.
That's kind of what I tell people about the nature of podcast advertising. Like, it's pretty tough to build a full-time income off of it because it's this game of amplitude. How many people can I reach, and frequency? How often can I reach them? It's like, well, if you're just doing one show a week, that's going to be tough. You got to have a really big audience to make that work. Same thing here. If it's going to be a monetized with ads model, I got to say more often. I get more impressions that way. But running Facebook ads, did you have a budget or a cost per subscriber that you were comfortable with out of the gate?
At that point, absolutely not. There was never a value of each subscriber where I knew as long as I get them for this much money, I can still make profit on them. I have then figured it out, and the number ended up being around $7 per subscriber. I don't even know what it is now because we don't do any Facebook advertising because we're kind of hit critical mass where they started to get really expensive to get. But in the beginning, and this was just kind of picked out of thin air, I was like, let's just keep it under $2 a subscriber. If I can keep it under $2 a subscriber, I have a couple $1,000 that I can invest in this thing. I'd quit my job and saved a lot of my salary. I'd only worked for 1 year before I ended up doing this out of college. So I had saved up about 25,000 bucks. I was like, honestly, I'm 20 at that point, 23 years old, but it quickly became apparent that it would be not a total failure. And that even if I did spend all the $25,000 on it, I'd probably be able to make that back with advertising. And so at a certain point, I just kind of sent it and spent it all on advertising. I mean, almost all of it.
Okay. Do you see that as the most viable path outside of friends and family trying to acquire subscribers that way?
Well, viable is different because it depends on if you could sell advertising. It's definitely the easiest and fastest. And I think it's what I recommend to anybody who wants to start a local newsletter. But in terms of another way you can get a lot of subscribers pretty quickly would be local Facebook groups. It's harder because you have to earn the trust of the admins and then do it in a way that's not annoying because the internet hates self-promotion. And a lot of groups like that have rules against it. But that's a really good way to get a lot of subscribers. I learned that by accident because somebody posted my newsletter in one of those groups and we got 625 subscribers overnight. And I was like, wow, okay. What's that about?
Yeah, this, and that's a nice spike.
I found out where they came from and I was like, that's amazing.
How can we do more of this? Instead of paying $2 a piece, yeah.
Yeah, so is it the most viable? I don't know. That depends on your ability to sell advertising, but is it the fastest and easiest and what I recommend? Yes.
Okay. And so the $2, that was kind of the target metric, especially early on. And then the $7.
Yeah, but I just pulled that out of thin air. So definitely don't take the $2 as gospel.
Sure. And then the $7 was your kind of estimate lifetime value. Where did that number come from?
Yeah, that was like a very conservative lifetime value. That was assuming that they opened half of the emails and stayed for only 1 year reading based on our current advertising rates. So not all those things turned out to be true. They stayed for far longer than 1 year. The open rate guests did stay about the same. BHEF tells us it's 63-65% now, but I think that's a little high based on some things that like Apple tracking that most people probably know about, or if they don't, can't trust open rates as much anymore. But that was what that was based on. So the value was actually higher, but I was pretty conservative in the beginning with it just because I didn't have a lot of money to spare.
And do you remember what the ad looked like in terms of image, call to action? You know, how was that set up?
Yeah. So I tried a bunch of different ones. You mentioned something earlier about being this voice for the young people. It's actually not really the young people that read this newsletter. It's mostly women over the age of 45. That's really like our prime target demographic. They absolutely love it. And we have young people too, but I tried a bunch of different ads. The best performing one, it's just this like pretty attractive woman looking down at her phone. I don't even think she's looking at her phone. She's holding her phone like she would be looking at it, but then she's smiling and looking straight away from her. And then I think we put a little text over that that just, it was like an overlay graphic that said, I always know what's going on in Annapolis. And then there were a couple different pieces of copy that we put in the actual text of the ad that you can do on Facebook. But those changed a lot. The image did not change once I figured out what worked. So I think I spent like $12,000 to $15,000 of our Facebook ads blasting this picture of this woman out And that was the ad that worked. So I like to think if she ever shows up in Annapolis, this stock photo model, everybody will like kind of recognize her. Like they'll know she'll that be, they've seen be well her, there. But they won't be able to remember where, because it was just a random ad like 3 or 5 years ago. But they won't just like think she's a stranger. And I just hope that she visits and gets like all these like weird side looks, because everybody kind of recognizes her, but nobody really does. I would think that was hilarious. But yeah, that was the best ad. And honestly, that was like one of the first ones I ran. Kind of found success on it pretty early. You don't really need to overcomplicate the ads to grow a local newsletter. It's a free thing, and basically anybody in your town can read it. The best thing to do is just figure out which demographic responds to the ads best and cheapest, and also then turns into readers, and then just hit those people hard. So eventually we just stopped targeting men, stopped targeting women under 40. We always only targeted within 10 miles of Annapolis. And that's also why I chose the radius that I chose. We only cover things within 10 miles of Annapolis, because that at the time, I haven't looked in a while, but I'm pretty sure it's probably still this way. That was the smallest radius that you could target on Facebook without actually putting in specific zip codes. And I found that when I put in specific zip codes, it was just more expensive. I don't know why.
Interesting.
I was targeting the same people if I was doing 10 miles versus uploading all the zip codes in. But yes, that's why I chose 10 miles. It was the shortest Facebook radius I could pick. So that's just what I chose to cover.
Okay. I love this line of she's looking at her phone. She says, I always know what's going on in Annapolis. I could see that working across any number of different towns. And it's like, in my case, I always know what's going on in Sammamish and rely heavily on just like our local neighborhood subdivision kind of Facebook group for just the latest on the rumor mill. It's like, okay, we could go a little bit broader and do something. I think that'd be fascinating to test out. So the paid ads, the local Facebook group, very organic. Sounds like other people were posting it. Hey, this is a cool resource. Go sign up over here. Anything else that was juicing subscribers, anything to like incentivize, share it with a friend, send it to 10 people, get a t-shirt, like not a Spark. Is it Spark Loop or what's the built-in like referral system type of thing?
In the beginning, I got a Viral Loops.
That's the one.
AppSumo lifetime subscription deal. I think I paid $300 once. And as long as I never had more than 20 or 25,000 people on my list, I could use Viral Loops for free then forever. That was before any of the newsletter platforms had the referral program stuff built in. Now, the only two that I would recommend using, which would be Beehive or ConvertKit, they both have one built in. So it's not as big of a deal. But at the time, it was kind of hard for me to do it because it required Viral Loops and Zapier into MailChimp, and it was a little bit expensive. It wouldn't have been worth it without having the Viral Loops deal, but now that they're all built in, it's totally worth it, and you should do it from day one. But Facebook ads were the number one driver.
What was the incentive tiers that you had on there?
That's what I'm about to say. Facebook ads were the number one driver. Referral program was probably the number two, and I always tell this to people for any newsletter, any free newsletter, that the first level should be the only one that you ever care about. The first incentive, because only like 10% of your readers will ever do any referring, and 98% of those, not exaggerating, will never get past the first level. So really only put thought into the first level. Not saying just ignore the second and third, but they really don't matter that much. And I say second and third because that's all I have, but some people do four or five or more. I don't think you should do more than five. So on that note, your first one should be free and easy for you to fulfill. It should be automated if you can, or as automated as possible. So like, you don't want to be sending people stickers. You don't want to be having to put that in an envelope, write an address or print out a label and stick it on there. You just don't want to have to do that. Because if you get a newsletter of 100,000 people, you might have 1,000 people that are referring or at some point you will. And that's a lot of sticking stuff in envelopes. So you want to make it as easy as possible for you, and you want to make it free. But then you also have to think about what's actually desirable for this audience. And I don't remember where I heard, well, I remember where I heard it, but I don't remember where he heard it. Sam Parr, you've already brought up the hustle once. He said he one time was talking to an old school newspaper publisher, and he said, what's your secret? And he said, names. I print names whenever I can. And so I do that. I print names whenever I possibly can. You got some kid at the local high school got some scholarship, then their name's going to be in there no matter how short it is. We're talking about the lacrosse team that won the county championship. three of the girls on the team got hat tricks in the game. We're definitely going to put their names in there because their parents are going to read it and love it and probably share it with their friends. So on that note, I went for the referral program. The first incentive was if you got three people to join the newsletter, then you got happy birthday wish to the top of the newsletter on your birthday. And that was incredibly popular. It still is. I stopped doing it because it's been hard to get referrals now. Like you said, we in the intro, we kind of have almost half the town. So finding people who don't actually read it is getting harder.
Yeah. And if you're only targeting women over 40, it's like, I imagine the other half of the town is not fitting that demographic.
Well, that's who I was only targeting in advertising. I'm happy if they read and I would love them to.
Sure, sure.
But I wasn't going after them to build the core subscribers. That is what I tell people now, though. They're like, how do I get referrals? And I'm like, honestly, ask men. Like, ask the men in your life if they read the newsletter, because 75% of our audience is women. So if you want referrals, don't ask your girlfriends. Ask your dude friends.
Yeah, they're already subscribed.
Yeah, they are. That's the low-hanging fruit. If you want the easy referrals and you want to game the system, go after the men.
Okay, so this was tier one. Happy birthday wish at the top of the newsletter.
Yeah, and we've done, I think we've done hundreds of those.
Okay,
people still ask for them, even though, so I've recently stopped doing it. And instead of doing that, I said, you can now join our private Facebook group for first level referrers only, which I don't actually do anything with and definitely need to do more. But I think at some point, and I haven't figured out the way to do this yet, it's easy, because again, I'm all about easy. I want to start selling those birthday shout outs. You know, like they do on the scoreboards at sporting events.
Right, right. Pay $40, get your name on the Jumbotron type of deal.
Exactly. And so people love the birthday shout out so much, I think I could start selling them, but I don't want to sell more than two a day. And I haven't found a good system or integration with, I use Zapier for a lot of things where I can basically automate that, but only limit it to two per day. I haven't done that. I want to figure that out because I do think we could make maybe a couple extra $1,000, but we stopped doing that as the first level, but it was wildly successful for 3.5 years.
Love it.
And like I said, the second and third levels don't even really matter. A lot of people get the first one. Nobody really get the second or third one. And then you'll have some people on the, it's just like a bell curve, right? You'll have some people on the complete other end of the spectrum who get hundreds and hundreds, maybe thousands of referrals. And then you'll have to figure out something to do really nice for them. Like we have one woman who has 625 referrals and
she was the one who put it in the Facebook group.
She was the one that put it in the Facebook group, which is how I'm lucky that she was, because that's how I figured out where they all came from. Otherwise, I wouldn't have been able to know. I would have seen that they came from Facebook with our Google Analytics, but I wouldn't have been able to know who put them there or what page or wherever they were. So I saw her referrals jump overnight and I was like, what's her name? I can't even remember. I went to high school with her son, which also helped reaching out to her. But she got 625 referrals overnight and I got her a gift card to her favorite restaurant. The next best one is 120. And we didn't do anything incredible for that. We could have, probably should have, but she's still super happy to support. But she did just email me yesterday, or this morning actually, and ask, can I have a birthday shout out for my daughter, Florence? And I was like, yeah, absolutely. If you gave us 120 referrals, even though we don't really do that anymore, you can absolutely have one of those because I'll do anything for you.
Yeah. Okay. So that was tier one. Was it just one, you prefer one friend to get the initial shout out, or this now the private Facebook group?
No, I'm greedy. So I made the first level three. Got to make it an attainable number, but you can push it to benefit yourself. Like a lot of people do one and that's fine, but you can get away with three and a lot of people will still do it and reach it. And they're not going to say it's too many. Nobody says that. I think if you only do one as the first incentive, you're kind of cheating yourself out of more growth that you could get for pretty much free. I wouldn't do any more than three, but I would definitely not do one.
Yeah, I like it from the standpoint of how do you turn one subscriber into two? Like this is an example from years ago on the show. This is Tiffany Alice, the Budgetnista, and she was running her 30-day Live Richer Challenge. And objective number one, day one, go find yourself an accountability partner. Like, boom, I just doubled my enrollment. And it was like super smart. More with Ryan in just a moment, including the tools he uses to run the newsletter and how he manages to compile and curate a compelling read every weekday, right after this. Are you struggling to close deals? B2B selling is tougher than ever, and that's why I'm excited to partner with LinkedIn Sales Navigator for this episode. LinkedIn's Sales Navigator is a sales intelligence platform that helps professionals effectively prospect and engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator helps you target the right buyers, surface key signals such as job changes or which accounts you should prioritize, and shows you hidden allies so you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's billion member platform, billion with a B, Sales Navigator gives you the most up-to-date first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with the people that matter most. Right now, Side Hustle Show listeners can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator free for 60 days at linkedin.com/sidehustleshow. That's linkedin.com/sidehustleshow for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/sidehustleshow to get started. Being an entrepreneur and being able to work remotely definitely has its perks. I've recorded podcasts everywhere from Vietnam to Italy, drafted newsletters from Japan, hosted mastermind meetings from Spain, ended up being in the middle of the night to get to U.S. Business hours, and outlined courses in Mexico. The common thread of all of these trips, though, is Airbnb. We love being able to get exactly what we're looking for in a place to stay and have a more local experience than staying in some giant hotel chain. And you know me, I'm always thinking about the next side hustle idea, the next income stream, right? And one that's at the top of the list is hosting our place on Airbnb while we're traveling. That way the house doesn't have to sit empty. We could use the income to help pay for the trip. And we've heard from several successful Airbnb hosts on the show. And what's interesting is a lot of them started with almost that exact strategy, renting their place or even a spare room while they're out of town. Taking inspiration from that, you might have an Airbnb right under your nose. In fact, your home might be worth more than you think. You can find out how much at airbnb.com/host. That's airbnb.com/host to find out how much your home is worth. All right. So today you're sending with Beehive. Initially it sounded like it was MailChimp. Today, Beehive. What else is going on tools and tech wise to put all this stuff together?
So Beehive is probably the most important because we use it to send the emails and store the email addresses. But second most important, and it would be a close second, is Notion. I kind of live and die in Notion. It is the source of pretty much everything. It's where we do all of our content for the newsletter. It's got a calendar in there that everything we're doing. It's where we do all of our content planning for social media. It's where I keep all my standard operating procedures, my style guide for the newsletter, which is really cool because it can be really interactive and fun for someone to read the style guide, which is usually boring. So that's a good thing to have in Notion because it's just all the different blocks you can add are really, really cool. Literally, I keep everything in there. Third most important would probably be Newspaper Manager, which is a pretty old appearing software that just tracks our advertising inventory and acts as a CRM. I think if I were better at technology, better at coding, software production, and stuff like that, I would probably make my own, and I would probably try to sell it, and I would probably stop publishing local newsletters because there's way more money in selling software to the people who do these things than actually doing it. Because I think this software is...
Yeah, sell shovels into the gold rush.
Exactly, exactly.
Here's the next side hustle. Here's the next thing, yeah.
I just don't know how to do it, which can be figured out, but needs money that I don't have to invest in it yet, but I still want to. But it's a good piece of software. I was about to say it's a great piece of software. It's not a great piece of software. It's a good piece of software. But
because the great one is coming.
The great one is coming, and it's going to be called who knows what, but I'm going to make it. It's really important because we limit our inventory every day. We have 5 ads of 3 different kinds, and there can only be 1 of the top 2 and 3 of the bottom 2 or the bottom 1. And we can't sell more than that each day. Otherwise, we're screwed because we can't just add another page like a magazine can. We just have a set thing. Before, I was keeping track of all the ads in Notion, and that was not good because it didn't have any inventory limiting ability, and it just wasn't the right thing. It wasn't a CRM. It wasn't good for selling ads. So that's probably a third most critical piece of software, but that's like, I don't even remember how much I pay for it anymore because I don't look at the bill too often, but it's several hundred dollars a month. And I'm like, I could build this piece of software because I know exactly what it needs to do because I'm doing it. I'm living this life. when I was looking for one, I was like, I know exactly what this needs to do. I know exactly what piece of software I'm looking for because it's such a specific need that when I find it, I'm in. Like, I got it. There's one out there called Sponsy that is selling software just like that for, they're focused on newsletters. But at the time, it just wasn't powerful enough. I think they've added a couple more features now that are more powerful. But at the end of the day, there can definitely be more than one of those.
Talk to me about the content side of things, because it is a free newsletter. The content has to be excellent to get people to continue to open it and continue to stay subscribed and be able to view the ads. We'll eventually get into ad sales. But if I'm starting out and I want to do this for Sammamish, which is population 65,000, like similar size town, a little bit bigger, like, okay, I don't know if anybody else is attempting to do it here. Maybe it's like ripe to come in and see that market opportunity. The challenge is doing it daily. And I guess you mentioned, well, when I was starting out, I did it once a week and then I moved to 3 days a week. I guess you could scale it up, but like consistently coming up with great content that's all local focused. I'm curious, one, how you source all that stuff and then how you put it together and do it every day of the week.
It's easier than people think. At least it is now after 3.5 years of doing it, coming up on 4.
It's become a habit, yeah.
But even in the beginning, it was easier than I thought. Because after a certain amount of time, you become the source, or at least a source, that people can go to get their press for whatever they're doing. Or, yeah, just that. So you have to just establish yourself as a source, and then people will start coming to you. And then the hard thing actually becomes, and I've always said this, and I say this to my head of content all the time that I just hired, it's more important what you don't include than what you do. It's more important what you say no to. Because like you said, you have to keep the content excellent every day so people keep coming back. So we get sent a lot of things, and I'm not going to say anything specific because I don't want to, on the off chance anybody from Annapolis is listening to this, I don't want to get anybody upset because of saying their event's not cool. But we get sent a lot of stuff where I'm just like, that isn't going to go in. That's not cool enough. It doesn't have broad enough appeal. Maybe it's just a very specific group of people that want to know this. And okay, we're sending out to every single person in Annapolis or whatever, half of it. But we don't do any kind of segment thing like that. So we're giving people specific things they're interested in. It's just like, sometimes you got to decide that's not going in. That's not cool enough. That is not broad enough appeal. But how do we get content? We just look at a bunch of places. It's probably like 50 websites that we check every day. Some combination of the press release sites from the city and county and fire department and organizations like that to the local newspaper. We still have one of those, a couple blogs that post stuff, a couple individual people that are posting stuff regularly, good content.
Yeah. So it's a lot of work to kind of scour through this and compile, I guess, curate what is the most important or most interesting.
Yeah. That's why the newsletter has value. Because if you're going to comb through all of these things, understand, or well, even before that step, pick which of them actually matter, understand all of them individually, and then summarize them, that's a lot of work. And the average person, especially the average person who reads our newsletter, like mom with kids or working professional, they don't have 3 to 4 hours a day to read all these stories, decide which ones are important, and then actually read through them and understand them enough to tell their friends about them. This is effectively what we do. And so that's why it is valuable. It's a time saver. All the information, in the beginning, all the information we got was 100% public and anybody could have gotten it. Now we are, like I said, the source or a source where people are sending us stuff. And sometimes we have to sit on stories before we can put them out because the business isn't ready to announce that they're opening yet, but we know about it and no one else does, or very few other people do. So not everything we're doing now is publicly available. Some people are giving us inside scoops, if you will, pun intended, or press releases that are not getting sent to everybody else. I don't know, but you really just have to get the ball rolling. You'll find good content in the beginning. And as long as you can do that for a couple months and stay consistent and be a great source, then you'll start getting more content than you care to handle. And that won't be a concern anymore. Or you'll go back to something that you did a while ago. Like at any point in time, I could throw in a link to our stories of the best coffee shops in town or the best pizza in town. And even better, I can ask you if you agree with my assessment or my writer's assessment of what is the best in town. So you start to build up your own content that if you are light on a day, then you can hand that off or include that. But also at the end of the day, if you're doing an email newsletter, no one's ever going to complain about getting a shorter email, right? When was the last time you complained?
Fair.
Oh, this email wasn't long enough. No, they just want to get on with their day, or they're just reading it. They're reading it on the toilet, or they're reading it in the bathroom, waiting in line for coffee or something like that. As long as there's like, I try to make sure there's just like one super, super valuable thing every day, like something that everyone wants to know. And as long as you keep pretty consistently every day something in there, then you'll become sticky.
And you're organizing these in Notion kind of as you're scouring through these 50 different sources, like, okay, that's interesting, drag it over here. Okay, that's interesting, drag it over here. And then compiling the newsletter from there.
Yeah, that's how I did it when it was just me. Now I have an assistant that goes through all the sources, and she just does anything that's related to Annapolis. She puts it into Notion, and then I look at that basically as soon as she's done that. Like, I'm on Do Not Disturb, so I didn't get the notification, but we started recording here at 2 and it's 2:56 now. She probably sent a message around 2:30 that she had done that for the afternoon. So I'll go through as soon as she's done.
For tomorrow's edition,
and I'll assign the stories. Now that I have two writers as well, we cut off at 3 p.m. So anything that comes in after 3 p.m. will go to the next day's scoop. Today, I'll look at the afternoon assignments and see if there's anything in there that really is important that can't wait until Friday. And I'll write it if so, just because I'm on the podcast during that time when I normally would be looking at what those stories are. But I've just hired that head of content now that'll be her job, is to look through all those stories. Anything that says Annapolis, my assistant will throw it in there. And then the head of content will sift through like I do right now and decide what's actually important. What do we need to include? What could we include if, when we go through the stuff that we need to include and there's really not that many stories, what might not be totally up to standard, but can definitely, it could fit, and we just need some content because we don't want to do nothing in there. I try to have like 8 stories every day, at least something like that. On a good, busy, real good day, we might have 16, and they're all really, really short. Some of them are less than 100 words. Most of them are less than 100 words. But if I'm at like 5, yeah, maybe I'll let the quality drop down a little bit just so I can get one or two more in there.
Yeah, you said something earlier, was it's more important what you don't include. And this is my like working theory of podcasting too. It's like, yeah, the episodes you air have to be great, but equally it's the ones that you don't air, that never see the light of day, that you decide not to record. It's like, that didn't quite make the cut. And it sounds like it's the same thing here. And the other parallel is, after a while, you get a lot of inbound, right? You get guest pitches, or you get story pitches, or stuff comes to you, but you know, people say, hey, you ought to talk to so-and-so. And it sounds like the same thing here. People start to share their events with you versus having to go out and try and source everything yourself. So lots of parallels there. And I think that's pretty interesting, but lots of work on this curation side. And that's where the value comes from. Like, look, we're sifting through these dozens of different sources to bring you the best of the best. And that's why the newsletter has value. We're about to get to the monetization part, how Naptown Scoop actually makes money every time they hit send. But first, let's take a moment to thank our own sponsors for helping make this episode free for everyone. As business owners, we understand that good design and product packaging can be key to growing your business. And if your sales are lagging, a rebrand might be part of the solution. Still, it can be really challenging to figure out how to even start the process. If you're asking yourself, is a rebrand really worth the effort and the cost? You're going to want to check out a recent episode of a great podcast called This is Small Business with Andrea Marquez that walks you through the process of figuring this out. The episode is called How Good Design Can Help Increase Sales, where I learned that design is so much more than just aesthetics. It impacts user experience, it impacts brand perception, and ultimately, it impacts business growth. This is Small Business is full of practical insights that you can apply to your business right now, and it answers so many of the kinds of questions that all entrepreneurs have, like how to build your marketing strategy, how to use email lists to increase revenue, and tips to accelerate small business growth, along with tons more. So follow This is Small Business, an original podcast from Amazon, wherever you listen. Let's shift gears and talk about the monetization side. It sounds like it's primarily ad monetized. At what point, like how many subscribers, how many months in, did you start selling your first ads on this thing?
I learned from somebody, and I can't remember who, that you should be open to it immediately. And so I had a link or like an encouragement in there. If you want your business in here, let me know. And it was like within the second or third week that somebody reached out and actually ended up agreeing to something. This was a web design agency that wanted to advertise. And I said, I will give you, I think it was five or six ads. I think it was six ads. Six ads anytime in the next 6 months, you can use them, but you have to pay $500 today. And for some reason, this person said yes. And so we did that. And that was how I made the first money. I don't know if I did that again, or if I, then I just started selling like, here's a four pack for this many dollars. But it was really quick that we started selling ads. Not a lot of ads, but enough ads where I was like, okay, I'm still comfortable spending $1,000 on Facebook ads this week, or a couple hundred dollars on Facebook ads this week. Cause I know that at least on some level, somebody is going to pay to be in here. So the magic T word is traction. I had it and I was like, all right, I have a little bit.
Let's do it.
I bet you that there will be a lot and I can go all in on this and still spend a bunch of money on Facebook ads. It took a while to get meaningful dollars, like probably many months, but got some right away. And that's, I tell people all the time, if they're going to start this thing, you should always have a link or an encouragement to advertise. No matter how many subscribers you have, just get dollars somehow.
I like that, including that in the footer of the email, like your ad here, you'll see your message, inquire about advertising in future editions, just to plant that seed.
Yeah, because a lot of people won't see it and think of it. But if you say they can, they'll think, oh yeah, maybe I will reach out.
Yeah, you see it. Justin Welsh is one of these examples where you see it like down at the bottom, there's a link to book your sponsorship spot for an upcoming newsletter. I don't know if he does any vetting of like, I'm not advertising that. There's like an implied endorsement here.
Yeah, we definitely did not do a lot of vetting in the beginning, but maybe about a year in started actually doing that. It's like, I only want to be associated with really, really good brands.
I think it's illustrative of maybe the type of client that would make sense, especially at that price point where it's like, dude, if you get one new client from this, like it erases your $500 ad expense and then some. But curious how you have it priced today. I think you mentioned we have five different ad slots per day, I guess, probably based on placement and visibility and structure of those ads.
Yeah. So three different kinds. The bottom kind has three each day. So top one has your logo at the top, a picture up to 150 words. It's the first ad. Unless we have a headline story, it's the first thing in the newsletter. So probably about 60% of the time, it's the top thing anybody sees. Then in the middle, we call it a feature ad. And that has 100 words, a photo, and that's right in the middle. And then right near our live music section at the bottom, which is our most popular thing, we have three ads we call baseline, which are text only, 70 words and a headline and a link. And everybody, all these can be linked. It's funny now at the beginning, those ads I sold that web design guy were headline ads or what, a very early version of those. And it was $500 for six of them. Now, an individual headline ad, if anybody wants to buy one, is $812.50. And it goes down with volume. You know, if you're going to buy 12, then that unit cost goes down. If you're going to buy 24, that unit cost goes down. If you're going to go buy 48, be crazy and spread those over the next 2 years, so that the unit cost will go down. Or we have two advertisers that do that every single week. They just pay a lot of money. But the prices are very, very different from when we first started. Everything is really just pulling out of thin air. How much does this cost? $500 for six ads. Everything was just thrown out.
Is there a rule of thumb for X price based on every 1,000 subscribers or something like that?
I heard a rumor back in the day that Morning Brew was charging $70 per 1,000. And so I kind of roughly based it on that. And it's actually still kind of around there. Our top ad, it's like very loosely based on that, or I don't think it's loosely based on that anymore. Maybe it's just worked out that way that it's still on there. Once it started stabilizing, I used to change prices every week because we would be adding hundreds of subscribers every week. And I'll be like, I just sold an ad to you for $200 for 800 subscribers and just had a really good run of Facebook ads. And now we have 1600 and I'm not going to charge $200 again. So I would change it every single week. Then I started changing it, I think like every month, and then it was every couple months. And now I just change it every year. And it's not on any kind of, oh, we have this many more subscribers, it should be this much more. Now I'm basically up it on inventory. If we sell out, then, and it's like we sell out really easily, I know it's too low. If it's harder, but we still sell out, I'm like, okay, we could do a little bump. If we're not selling at all, thankfully this hasn't happened yet, then maybe we stay the same or even worse, go lower. now it's not really based on any kind of formula. It's just based on feel of, oh, last year we sold all these way too easily. Okay, we'll double the price. And then we sold them all out again, but it took longer. I was like, okay, cool. That's probably a good number. Well, that was 2 years ago. We doubled it. Last year, we just went up by, I think it was 20%. This year, probably just go up by 10% and maybe stabilize somewhere around there and just upgrade the prices every year by 8 to 10%.
Is it most common to sell like a multi-month package? Like, right, you're going to be featured 8 times over the next 3 months. Like, is that how it's typically structured?
I like to sell long packages. We have people who sign on to be on there every other week for 2 years. We have people who are on there every other week for 1 year. We have some people who are just pretty seasonal, but they're on for the same 6 months and they'll sign 2 year deals for those 6 months. I just like that because it's easier. And also it ups your average client value. There's a, I can't say too much about this, but there's a website that I want to buy right now because I think I can do a lot better. I think that it's a great opportunity and their average, they have way, way more visibility than I do, way more impressions, way more uniques, but their average customer value is like 1/5 of mine, which is why I think I can buy it and do really well with it. But I'm just always trying to increase that. We have a dentist client right now who's on just once a month and our standard is really twice a month. So they're on once a month, but they've been killing it. They've been doing really well with it. So rather than trying to go sell a new client, it's way easier to just sell someone who's already selling with you and increase that customer value.
Increase their frequency.
Yeah. I went to them and said, hey, do you guys, it's been working out pretty well once a month. You want to juice it and you'll get a better unit rate and you'll be in there more and you've already made your money back. And then a lot, because I know you told me how many clients you got and I'm kind of guessing what your average customer value is worth based on industry comparisons. And I think I'm probably pretty close. And so it's just way easier to make those sales than to go out and cold call a new person and get a new one. So I'm always trying to increase customer value. And one way to do that is just raise prices every year. And nobody has ever canceled because of the increase. We've had people that advertised, stopped advertising, came back for whatever reason. They came back later, maybe in this case, 2 years later, and asked for a new proposal. And I told them and they were like, whoa, that's too expensive for us. We can't do that anymore. But they're also a nonprofit organization. That's a little different. No business, no for-profit business has ever canceled because we raised rates.
Was that, so a little bit of inbound based on the call to action at the bottom in the early days, and then a lot of cold calling, a lot of outbound sales, trying to get people signed up?
No, now a lot of cold calling, kind of hit a number where it's, I don't want to call it critical mass because that makes it sound like can't grow anymore. But this is one of those things I just did really well, got really lucky with. I figured that if I could get a really good partner in town, that would just be good. I didn't know why. I just knew it would be good. And there was this guy who was spending money everywhere. He's a realtor, spending money in everywhere. I was like, I need to get some money out of this guy because he's just putting his money everywhere. And I bet you I could get a lot. And that would be really good momentum. And like I said, I just know it'll be good. I don't know why, but I know it'll be good. So long story short, we did get him. A lot of cold calling, finally got a meeting, finally sold him. And after that, inbound leads poured in because it was super validating that this guy, who I said he was spending money everywhere, and he was, but it wasn't just that. It wasn't like, oh yeah, great, you got that guy's money and he's spending money everywhere, so that's fine. He's the best at what he does. Not even close. He's the best. Like, he's the best anecdotally, just if you work with him and feel how he makes you feel, but he's also the best by number. He only sells waterfront houses. He's the number one individual in the state of Maryland by a lot. He's just absolutely the best. And so once we got him in there, it was super validating for us. And we got a ton of inbound leads. And I didn't really do any outbound sales. I would just kind of take meetings with inbound leads. And that's how we got to that $200,000 in revenue that we did last year. Now I've hired a head of sales who does a lot of outbound and has been closing a lot of new deals. He's only about a month in. My goal is 350 this year. That's looking probably not likely, but I think we'll get close to it. Even if we got to 300, I'd be stoked. 50% growth in a year after not anywhere near 50% growth would be a good step up. So yeah, that's the next step, but a lot of inbound just because we got lucky picking this one business. And I was like, I know it'll be good, but I didn't know why. I didn't think anybody would come inbound from it. I just knew it would be a good thing. I knew it would be a good momentum swing. And it was much bigger than I anticipated.
Yeah, it's another example of a type of client where if I get one lead from this, even if I get three leads a year, like if I'm selling $1 million waterfront house, like my commission from that erases all that expense. Plus it's just, it sounds like he wants to be everywhere anyways. And it's like, look, front and center in people's inboxes. It's a smart place to be for that.
It's even better than that. His average home price is 2.6 million. So he's definitely making his money back. And then this is the real secret. We do, for the most part, we do exclusive advertisers per industry if they spend a reasonable amount of money with us. Like, we're not going to give the $1,500 a year customer exclusivity in their industry, but if they're spending tens of thousands, that's high for us. That would be something that warrants exclusivity. So I do no other residential real estate agents. And he knows that if he did cancel, if I said the price is now this, and he was like, nope, I'm out, then I would make probably a maximum of 3 phone calls. And I would have another real estate agent in there, probably at the new price or close to it. Mm-hmm. And he would never get back in because we would do exclusive for them too. And he got it first. He was the first agent we've ever had. We've never had another one. And he doesn't want to lose that, I don't think.
It sounds like he was kind of the anchor tenant that ended up attracting others as well. Like if you had a retail plaza and you attracted the Walmart or something. Yeah. Very good.
I call him the white whale.
Yeah. Now you've got a lot of inventory to sell. We're talking 5 ad spots a day times 5 days a week. And one thing that's interesting, even at the 200,000 revenue level, you know, already at or above this metric that traditionally heard of in email marketing of $1 per subscriber per month, which for my world and sending once a week, like that's pretty high, but sending every day, like that would pencil out. And if you get to 300,000 at 18, 19, 20,000 subscribers, you're well above that. And that's pretty impressive. And the question...
I've actually never heard that stat.
Oh, I think it comes from Russell Brunson from ClickFunnels. The question is like, at what point does it kind of max out? Like you're already at half the population. How much room to grow this thing is there? And even not to say that it has to grow indefinitely, but it's like, okay, can we get this thing to 500,000 a year and then go focus on our software project? Where do you want to take it?
Yeah, I think audience is probably pretty close to maxed out. Like I said, I'm not spending on any Facebook ads at this point because I have to spend a lot to acquire a reader. But we are still getting new readers because people are telling their friends or we have SEO content or something like that. So we're not totally maxed out. Like we're still growing every single day. Even if it's by 1 or 2 email addresses, it's bigger every single day. And most of the time it's more than 1 or 2, but it's probably more like 7 to 10, which is not a lot, but we're not doing anything to acquire those 7 to 10. So that makes me happy. We're not losing any. In terms of revenue, I think it probably maxes out just newsletter at 400,000 to 500,000. And that's with everything completely sold out. So you're probably never going to get there. Probably 400 would be a really good target. 350 is an aggressive target for this year. 400 will definitely be the target for next year from newsletter. But then we can start selling Instagram stuff. We're selling a lot more Instagram reels now. And those are pretty good margin things. It's not really any work for me if I do it right, set it up right.
Who makes that? So the company makes those and you post them on the feed?
Well, those are my favorite. Sometimes that does happen. The company's like, hey, we have a video. Can we post it on your feed? And I'm like, yeah, it's a good looking video. We can post that.
What do you charge for those?
I'll give them a little bit of a discount, especially if I've worked with them on other things or they're going to buy a couple of them. Like we have a running race company that bought a couple of those, but just had their own video. I think we charge them like $500 to post each one because they did 2. Usually it would be 800, but that also relies on maybe us making a little bit of it. Now at this point, my standard price for that is $1,500. If somebody called and said, I have our own video, we've worked with you before, I'd probably go down to 1,000 at this point. But if somebody's going to come in and do, we're going to produce something, I have to go and film it, or I have to pay someone to go and film it, or we have to pay a couple people to go film it. Cause in some cases, like when it's coming up, I need a video and I need a drone. So maybe that would be over 2,000, but based on who it is and their average customer value, they should make their money back pretty easily. It's all about the value that you're creating.
What role did Instagram play in the growth of the business?
It's hard to say how many people have come to the website and converted from Instagram, but In terms of the growth of the business, it's been fantastic because it's the public validator. Nobody can see how many newsletter subscribers we have every day except me and the team. And then if anybody gets the media kit, they can see it. But anybody can go see the Instagram. They can see how many people follow it. They can see how many people are actually liking the post and commenting on the post, which is a good number. It's just a great reputation thing. It hasn't been a lot of advertising dollars that people are spending on there. It hasn't been a ton of newsletter subscribers that we're getting, but it's a really, really good wow value. It's funny. My newsletter is smaller. It's 18,400 compared to 22,000. But if you know anything about newsletter versus Instagram, you know that's much more powerful.
Totally.
And newsletter last year generated, I think, like 170 in revenue, and the Instagram was like 3. So everybody introduces me though, as they're like, oh, this is Ryan. He's got this really big Instagram. And I'm just laughing on the inside because it looks really big. And it is big. It's a big Instagram, especially for our town.
Yeah, but, big for the local market. But, yeah,
but I should be introduced as the guy with the local newsletter if they were turning about actual power, like what you could do with it. We're doing a blood drive next week for our local hospital. And I put it in there today, 6 a.m. I went to check around, I think 11, how many spots were left. And there was one spot left. And so we filled up 35 spots in 3 hours or 4 hours, five hours with just the newsletter. I didn't even have time to put it on Instagram yet. So I do think it's always funny when people introduce me as the guy with the big Instagram.
Yeah, like, that's what they could see.
Actually, the newsletter is the pretty good thing here. But yeah, it's not the thing that you can go on and see. You can go be impressed by 22,000 followers. You have no idea how many other people are getting this newsletter that you get every day.
Yeah, well, this has been fascinating stuff. You got me thinking about like, oh, could I do this for Sammamish? Should I do this for Sammamish? I know Nathan Berry was starting up something for Boise. So I was like, well, maybe there's something here. You make a compelling case for the local newsletter business. You can check it out, naptownscoop.com. You can find Ryan at lifeof_scoop on Twitter. It's a good place to follow along and see what's going on in the local newsletter business. Let's wrap this thing up with your number one tip for Side Hustle Nation.
Read the book, How to Get Rich by Felix Dennis. It is at the very least entertaining, and at best, it could possibly change your life. It's just absolutely incredible. Have you read it, Nick?
I have heard of it, but have not read it.
Like I said, even if it's just for entertainment, read it. Because the guy's a beautiful writer, and he's hilarious, and he's very interesting. So he tells this great story about his life. But if you're interested in your own business in any way, it's probably going to be your favorite book. It's so amazing. So that's my tip to anybody. Read it. Read it again. Buy it if you audible it, which I do recommend. The guy who reads it has a beautiful accent, but buy it, physical copy. Like, honestly, it's an instruction manual too. There's some really amazing things in there.
All right. How to Get Rich by Felix Dennis. We'll link that up for you. A couple takeaways before we wrap up. One thing that really stood out was this idea that momentum breeds momentum. Like, the more people subscribe to it, the more of a thing it becomes kind of this self-perpetuating cycle. The more advertisers you book, the more people see that people are booking ads. Like, it really starts to get that flywheel spinning. And the other thing, if you're going to do this for your hometown, you're going to have to live it and breathe it. You have to really be the curator of that information, but good things can really happen as a result. So again, Ryan, appreciate you stopping by, sharing your insight. Big thanks to our sponsors for helping make this content free for everyone. You can hit up sidehustlenation.com/deals for all the latest offers from our sponsors in one place. Thanks for supporting the advertisers that support the show. That's it for me. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you're finding value in the show, the greatest compliment is to share it with a friend. So fire off that text message. Hey, we should totally start this for our town. Until next time, let's go out there and make something happen. And I'll catch you in the next edition of The Side Hustle Show. Hustle on.